Welcome to the She Wears Armor podcast. I'm your host, Heather Lauder. I'm a daughter of the king, a wife, a mama to six, podcaster, coach, and advocate. I'm a survivor of domestic abuse and a former family law paralegal. I know you thought getting away from your abuser would feel like freedom, but now it seems like staying would have been easier. You're not only battling your ex, now you're up against a broken justice system, agencies that are corrupt, and dealing with officials who act like you're a bother. You are emotionally and financially drained and don't know how much more you can handle. If you're ready to build and implement a strategic action plan for your high conflict court case, find healing after toxic relationships, and learn your true identity in Christ, go grab a caffeinated drink, a notepad, and that favorite pen you probably took from someone, and let's get cracking. Welcome, welcome to episode 4 of She Wears Armor. On today's episode, I open up my heart and share my journey marked by pain, adversity, and unimaginable trials. My story of sexual abuse at a very young age, growing up in poverty, and landing ignorantly in the middle of big-time drug dealers will allow you to witness the resilience of the human spirit. But the story doesn't end there. I faced the shattering loss of close family members and the biological father of my children to suicide, only to end up in the middle of a domestic abuse situation. Yet, in the midst of this darkness, a profound revelation emerged. Through unwavering faith and sheer determination, I discovered a glimmer of hope, a beacon of light that guided my path out of the darkness. Join me for a testament to the transformative power of faith, resilience, and the unwavering love of God. Please be aware that any advice provided is not to be considered legal counsel or therapy. I am not a licensed attorney or therapist, and my responses are for informational purposes only. For specific legal or therapeutic concerns, please consult with a qualified professional in the respective field. Hey guys, before we dive in, just a quick reminder. Please share this podcast with your friends. Screenshot it, share it on your Instagram and Facebook, and be sure to tag me in it so I can give you a shout out and a thank you. Make sure you're following all of my social media accounts to keep up to date on what's going on. I would also love to discuss some of these topics with you and get your ideas about what you want to hear on this podcast. Find me on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. Hit the follow or subscribe button so you will receive notifications when something new is happening. Please, and most importantly, take a minute to give me some stars and write a little review on Apple iTunes. This is how you can help other women find my content. The ranking will boost me up in the algorithm so they can get the help for themselves or someone they love. All right, let's go. When I wrote this, I must have started and restarted 100 times. I stared at the blank screen with my hands on the keyboard waiting for the right words to come. When the thoughts came, they flooded me with many different emotions. I really didn't know if I was going to get through this. It's a very vulnerable place to be, and you'll see that as you go through the story. I hope you laugh with me, and I hope you cry with me. And yes, I have shared some of my story with some people, but today you're going to hear the whole story, and hopefully you'll understand my reason for sharing my testimony and starting this podcast. I'm sure that you will even hear the exhaustion in my voice. It has taken me several days to write and then a few days to record. This episode is even late. It was supposed to be out yesterday, and here it is Friday at noon, and I'm still working on it. But it is important to me that I share my testimony so that you can see how far God has brought me from the brokenness I came from. So, how do you best tell your story? What exactly do you share with others? I don't know. I went to the Lord. He's the only one who knows what needed to be said here. I said, Lord, what parts of my mess do you want me to use so that you can bless others? The following is what he told me to share. I was born 29 short years ago. Come on, let a girl dream. Okay, so I was born 45 years ago in a little cow town called Okeechobee, Florida. Okeechobee is predominantly ranches and dairies, maybe some oranges. I had a 30 to 45 minute bus ride to school every day because I live so far out of town. The mascot for our one and only high school is the Brahma Bull. My daddy was born in Jessup, Georgia, and I'm really not sure how he ended up in Okeechobee. I really wish I knew more about him, but he didn't raise me. Most of my life, he lived about an hour away on the bottom of the lake. Daddy was just a boy when he went off to fight a war for his country. I have the letters he wrote home, which mean the world to me because it gives me a glimpse into who he was before the war changed him. He came back to a country that hated their veterans, called them names, and spit on them. I don't know that he was officially diagnosed, but knowing what I know now, I'm certain that he had PTSD. As a young girl, I remember him hitting the floor if there was a loud noise that came out of nowhere. I didn't understand it then. I had no clue what he was dealing with. My mama, now she was a tiny little thing. She made me look like a Sasquatch standing next to her. I never thought that was fair. It wasn't until around 2013 that I was told by an aunt that Mama was born an alcohol-fetal syndrome baby. When I was told this, it was like a revelation. It helped me make my life make sense. My mama wasn't the lovey-dovey type. Don't get me wrong. I have no doubt that she loved me very much, but she wasn't very affectionate. In fact, looking back, I see her as very distant. She seemed to always be on guard. She didn't remember much from her childhood. She did tell me that she was a preemie, but it was because my grandparents were driving around in a cow pasture in a Jeep and hit a bull hole, and that was what put my grandma into labor. Other than that, I always got the feeling that there was more to the story than what she was telling me. She didn't finish high school, and if I remember correctly, she may have made it to the 9th grade. I'm really not sure, though. I really hope Brody stops barking so I can get this recorded. No, he's not. Anyway, my parents got divorced when I was almost 4 years old. Mama and I moved down the road and moved in with a woman named Opal. Opal had a son named Ken. I recall being very protective over my mama from a very young age, and I'm not sure why or what I had seen, but I knew that I didn't like Ken around my mom. I remember actually calling him a very bad cuss word one time and not understanding why my mama whooped me instead of thanking me for trying to get rid of this guy. Anybody want a wiener dog? Because I'm about ready to let the door open and let him run. Anyway, Ken lived next door to his mama, Opal, and he was around a lot. He had horses, which was great because that meant when my parents divorced that I got to bring my little pony, Babe, with me. I had a Shetland pony, and she was my best friend until she died when I was around 11. One day while Ken was brushing his horse, Dusty, which was much larger than mine, he asked me if I wanted to help. Of course I told him no. He said, that's all right. You probably don't know how to do it anyway. So, of course, I had to show him. I think from that moment on, our relationship grew. I don't recall the timeline because I know he had a divorce somewhere in there, but eventually, it was always me, Mama, and Ken. We would saddle up and ride all over the place. We lived way out of town, so we had plenty of places to ride. Ken used to get tickled when he told the stories of me when I was little when we'd go riding. Those were some of the best times of my life. Sometimes he would get to laughing so hard he couldn't even talk. He would tell me that I was so stubborn. I can't even imagine that. But anyway, he would talk about how I would take off my little pony way ahead of them and slide her into a driveway. I'd wait for them to catch up and take off again. Mama would always yell that I was getting too far away and to stop, but of course I wouldn't listen. I got where I had trained Babe to do this, so eventually when I got her into a full run and would pass a driveway, she would turn into one that I wasn't ready for. Babe would go one way and I would go the other. I would cry and get so mad. Ken would try to explain the consequences of my actions, but I wanted none of that nonsense. They would have to make me catch Babe and get back on her. I remember another time we were riding and we rode by a neighbor's house. He was on his roof working on his antenna. For those of you that don't know what an antenna is, way back in the day, for the TV to have signal, we had these huge antennas that were next to our house. They were a big pole, and anyway, he was up on the roof working on that. And anyway, Mom, Ken, Ken's son Kenny, and myself were all on horses standing right underneath where he's working on the antenna. And I just sat there while the adults were talking, and the neighbor guy, for some reason, thinking it was funny, dropped a long coiled wire on my mom and her horse. My mama's horse Stormy reared up with her and I lost my ever-loving mind. Y'all, my mom was fine. She was laughing. She could handle a horse, but I was not fine. I remember being so mad that I think I would have literally fist fought that grown man. And I had to be around 5 or 6 years old, maybe. I started cussing him, trying to get my words out between crying and trying to catch my breath. I was crying so hard and the tears were flowing. I was just a mess. Once again, my mama got on to me. I couldn't believe it. I was just trying to protect her. Why didn't she know that? So, of course, I was going to show them. Don't ask me why. I don't know. But I decided that the best thing to do was to take off running back to the barn on my horse. But for some reason in my little bitty brain, I thought the theatrics weren't enough. My mama needed to understand how upset I was. So the only logical thing to do was not just to run back to the barn, but I was going to turn around backwards on my horse. I don't know. Maybe I wanted them to see my pitiful little face and how upset I was. I was just trying to take care of my mom. So anyway, here I go. I'm on the horse. I'm turned around the saddle, holding onto the saddle for dear life. This little pony is going as hard as she can with her little bitty legs. Normally, there wasn't much traffic if there was any, but there just so happened to be some at that time. So as I'm running down the road on my horse, here comes a car. And it is like up behind me. They're trying to figure out what in the world is going on. I'm upset. My mom's betrayed me. And here comes my stepbrother running his horse as hard as he can, coming after me. I'm sure he wanted to kill me. He gets up next to my pony, reaches down and grabs the reins to stop her. That made me even madder. So we sat there waiting for Ken and Mom to catch up so we could go home. I pouted all the way home, of course. So as you can probably tell, I was a feral child. Back then we went outside to play and we didn't come back in until it was time to eat supper. The adults in my home really never knew where I was. I lived in an area where we had neighbors, but the houses weren't on top of each other. We had a lot of room to ride bikes, roller skate, play hopscotch, do gymnastics, you know, all the things. I'm sure I was told what my boundaries were, but again, I was feral. There were a few kids in the neighborhood and we would all play together most of the time. Sometimes we would get mad at each other and there would be a fight, but most of the time things were good. I was very adventurous and not really scared of anything, which got me in a lot of trouble. There were a couple boys in the neighborhood that were my age. They were only there sometimes. We had played together before without any incidents, and I trusted them as far as a 6 to 7 year old knew to do. It was just us three, and for some reason, they talked me into going into the horse pasture to play. I didn't think anything of it. It was a pretty normal thing to do. There was a pond in the pasture, and from that was a huge pile of dirt that we would play on. There was a creek back there at the very back of the property. I mean, I spent a lot of time back there. It would be normal for me to be in that area. This part of the pasture, though, wasn't in really good shape at the time. It had a lot of dog fennel weeds that were tall. They were like these tall, looked like dill weed. Tall and over 3 foot. Some of them would get like 6 foot tall. And there was a lot. There was also an old barn in that area, too. If an adult was walking around in that area, you might not be able to see him. It was definitely a good place for kids to hide. So one day we were there and they stopped in the fennel and made me get on my stomach. They took my clothes off of me. And that day, a 6 or 7 year old little girl, and for many times after that, they took turns raping me. They threatened me with different things that I apparently believed for, you know, that to go on so long. I was too scared to tell my mom, and I never even thought of telling Ken, or anyone else for that matter. I remember being so afraid that my mom would find out and be so ashamed of me. I don't recall when they were finally no longer coming back to the neighborhood, but before the last time I saw them, I went to our mailbox to check the mail. I had on a little Mickey Mouse shirt and a pair of shorts. They came running up behind me and starting saying all kinds of inappropriate things, and then they started urinating on me. Both of them stood in the road, out in the open, and peed on me. I ran back into my yard, went straight to a spigot, and washed off before going back in the house. I never said a word. And thankfully, after that, I never saw him again. Speaking of that area, the pasture, when I was a little bit older, around 3rd or 4th grade, I guess, some friends and I were playing near that creek in the same pasture. We were playing follow the leader, and I was leading everyone through the mud. The mud was so deep that you could barely get through it. One of the girls actually lost her shoe in the mud. We never did find it. We had a new girl in the neighborhood who had brought her little sister along. When we all stopped to catch our breath, she started looking for her little sister, who was just a couple of years younger than us. She wasn't answering us. And I started looking around, and as I was looking around, I noticed her body against the fence. My brain was trying to figure out what she was doing and why she would be sitting like that. She was on her knees, but her face was in the tall grass along the fence line, and her arms were at her side. As I got closer to her, I started realizing that something was really wrong. I finally reached her and realized that her head was in an ant bed. In Florida, we have fire ants, so that was really not normal. She wasn't responding to us. Her sister and I were trying to wake her up. We just went into total panic mode. The other kids were standing back away from us in shock. I yelled at one of them to go get help. I realized there was just a bit of blood coming out of her ear, and there was a hoof mark on the side of her head. I knew then that she was at the end of the line when we were playing Follow the Leader, and when we went through the horses, one of them must have kicked her. I remember thinking that I was the leader, and she followed me, and I got her hurt, maybe even killed. I had to fix this, and I had to get her help. She wasn't much smaller than me, but I picked her up, and I carried her as quickly as I could through that pasture. It was quite a ways to carry her, but I did the best that my little body would allow. I met my mama at the front gate with her, and the parents took over, and after that, I never saw her again. Never saw any of them. I was told that she just had a few stitches, but was fine, and to this day, I still don't know whatever happened to her. They must have moved. Every day, I had to walk to the bus stop. I passed the house that they lived in, and I wondered how she was doing, and I always felt so responsible for that. A couple of years later, some neighbors invited me to go camping. They were having some type of family get-together. Mom allowed me to go, so I loaded up in the car with my best friend and her aunt and the aunt's two daughters. One of the little girls was around one and the other was maybe two. We drove out to a canal around the lake and pulled in and parked. We were all so excited and looking forward to all the things that kids enjoy about camping. We got out of the car and I grabbed the baby and I was holding her, and the toddler had a hold of my hand. I heard a boat, but I hadn't seen it yet, and started walking that way with the kids. As I got closer to the canal, I realized the guy driving the boat was the kid's dad. So I started saying the normal things. Look, there's your dad. Yeah, daddy's driving the boat. He does three circles in the water. And all I know is by the third, the boat went under the water. I don't know why. I don't know how, but it did. I just stood there watching in shock. My best friend's dad started taking his shoes and pants off and whatever he could so that he could jump in to help. The guy pops back up for a second and yells, and he goes under again, and he never comes back up. My friend's dad tried to find him, but he grew tired himself. And meanwhile, I'm holding his kids who are screaming. The aunt is screaming for her husband, and all I could do was try to comfort the babies the best that I could. It was pure chaos. It took them 3 days to find him. He had on combat boots and heavier clothes that weighed him down. I watched a man I knew well drown that day while holding his babies, who watched too. I had drawn their attention to him. One more thing that I had to bury deep. School, it was okay. I was always the teacher's pet. I was well behaved in school, surprise, even though I was feral. I was always trying to be good and get good grades to please my teachers. They were kind to me. I even had a teacher pick me up and take me to the beach with her and her niece once. It was a good time. Looking back, I think they probably felt sorry for me. I grew up really poor. We lived in a single wide trailer that was old then. Mama never worked out of the home while I was growing up, except for 3 weeks, and then she quit. Ken, he worked out of town all week. He was a crane operator, and the company he worked for built bridges, so they traveled around the state. He would only come home on the weekends, and I always looked forward to that. Like I said, we lived in a single wide, we were poor, but Mama was constantly working in the yard, the trailer was always clean, the yard was mowed, that kind of thing, and I always had to help. I always had chores. I'll never forget the time that I thought I was living the dream. We were going to get a double wide, y'all. The neighbors had a single wide in their pasture, and it just so happened to line up with ours, like the kitchen in that one was the same as the kitchen in ours. So my parents moved that trailer over to our place, lined it up, and me, Mama, and Ken made a double wide out of that thing. We even had a bookshelf. I remember when we were getting ready to move the trailer, I was over in the pasture checking that place out, checking the new trailer out, and I found a rat's nest with babies in it. I just thought they were so cute, and I rescued them. I saved them and hid them out in the woods somewhere. So I had to get the rats out of that house before we could get it. I was young, but I was aware that we were struggling financially. I didn't eat breakfast at home a lot unless it was a quick Pop-Tart, and that was a treat and very rare that I got that. I never took money to school to eat lunch and didn't pack one. I would tell my mom that I ate at school for free because I didn't want her to worry. Mama always had supper on the table and was such a good cook. We never had extras in the house like sweets, you know, the Little Debbies, or even baked cookies. We didn't have Cokes. We drank sweet tea. Or if I was outside, I had to drink out of the hose. We ate on rare occasions, seriously, just a couple times a year at Pizza Hut. It was always Pizza Hut. Mama loved those piazzos. I don't know if any of y'all remember that. Mama would have me call it in and we would go pick it up. We'd drive to town. Never eaten in the restaurant. If Mama went to town, it was on Friday, payday. And it was just whatever she had to do. Mama was a hermit. She hated going anywhere. I never understood it then, but now I understand that she had really bad anxiety. I just thought she was really shy, I guess. I worked really hard in school to be successful. I always made A honor roll or at least A B honor roll. And I was just always trying to do something to impress my mom. I wanted to prove to her that I was something. Mama only ever showed up at like 3 school functions. One was in kindergarten when I was the queen in the play of the Golden Goose. Grandma, my mom's mama, was still alive and she made my costume. So grandma and grandpa came, so mama must have came with them. There were other plays, award ceremonies, and the time in 4th grade where I won the school spelling bee. She wasn't there. As a matter of fact, a teacher took me to Wendy's after I won. She probably doesn't even remember this, but man, that was a big deal for me. I got a chicken parmesan sandwich meal with a coat, and I thought I won the lottery. We even ate inside. Mrs. Trent was her name. I still have no idea why she took me for that treat, but I never forgot it. The next time Mama showed up was my class ring ceremony, and then graduation. My dad didn't make it to one single thing ever, and Ken was out of town, so he never did either except for my graduation. My teachers through elementary school, they loved on me, and I am so thankful for that. Teachers are so important. My last year of elementary school was memorable in a good way and in a bad. We'll just get the bad out of the way, because the good deserves more time. It was the end of the day. I got on my bus. I went and sat in my seat, slouched down with my knees up against the back of the seat in front of me, probably getting ready to take a nap. And I realized there was a boy older than me in the seat in front of me. And he started to lean over the back of his seat with his hands coming at me. This boy was in middle school, I think. Had always been nice. Never ever seemed threatening. So I was confused at what was happening. He reached over, held me down, and groped me all over my body. I was shocked and immediately ashamed. He acted as if it was some kind of joke and laughed. He turned around and sat down like nothing ever happened. I think the reason I didn't tell the bus driver was because this was the time that my body really started changing and I did not look like a 5th grader. I had a very large chest size for my age and I was trying to hide that. I was always so embarrassed and ashamed of my chest. If I said anything, it would just draw attention to that, so I did nothing again. The good thing that happened was that we had DARE. It was something I looked forward to every week. I thought so highly of the deputies that came into our classroom, and I had so much respect for them. And then one day, a woman walks in the room. I was in total shock. My eyes never left her. I didn't even know that women could do that. It was at that moment that I decided I wanted to be a deputy. I held them all in such high regard that I wouldn't even speak to them unless spoken to. I was so impressed, but I definitely put her up on a pedestal. When I was 13, I started dating a 16-year-old. He gave me the attention I was starving for, and I thought this guy was going to be the one I was going to marry. I was clueless. No one ever talked to me about sex. No one ever even told me that I was going to have a period. Imagine my surprise when that came along. Total shock. Anyway, when I was 13, I went to my neighbor who was in her 20s, and I told her that I needed to take another pregnancy test. I took one before, and it was positive. So she took me to the Department of Children and Families, like DSS, DCF, it's different in different areas, social services. Anyway, they gave me a test, and it was positive too. I was terrified to tell my parents. I had no idea what I was going to do or how I was going to do it, but we were in it now. I told my boyfriend, who was excited and happy. Mind you, he wasn't even in school anymore. I knew how to choose him. I finally told my mom and Ken, and the sound that came out of my mom was horrible. She collapsed in the yard, and Ken was holding her. I couldn't breathe or even move. The disappointment I saw in Ken's eyes hurt me so much. They both told me that I was going to get an abortion. Look, I didn't even know exactly what that was, but I knew enough to know that it meant I was responsible for killing a baby, and I was having nothing to do with that. At 13, I was used to taking care of others, so it was only natural to me that I was going to do this on my own if I had to. I had talked to my boyfriend that night, or the next night, and his mom hatched a plan for me to go to my bus stop, and they would pick me up, and we'd run away. Wouldn't ever have to worry about it again. I told him I'd do it, but I did not do it the next morning. I didn't show up. Something just told me, don't do it. Side note here, I didn't know God. There was one girl in the neighborhood that went to church, so I kind of heard about this God. I asked my parents about God and asked why we didn't go to church. They told me that they believed in God and didn't need anyone to shove him down their throats. I even took it upon myself one day to jump on the church bus that came through our neighborhood. I don't even think I had shoes on. Didn't tell anyone. Was probably in first or second grade. Hopped on the bus. Went to this church where they fed me some snacks and Kool-Aid. But even then, I knew that I was being looked down on. I knew that at a young age. I think about that now and wonder, how in the world did any of them not look for my parents or anything? It's crazy I'm even alive. Anyway, I didn't know God, but God knew me. It wasn't long, just within a short time of telling my parents, that I had a miscarriage on the toilet, all by myself. I had no idea what was going on, never went to the doctor, and we never spoke of it again. Not a word. We just moved on. I always had this overwhelming sense of loss and had a grief that was just unbearable at times. I would sit in my room and cry constantly, hiding it though. I'd lost my grandma, which was my mom's mama, Lita Mae, right before my 8th birthday, and she was actually buried on my 8th birthday. I just missed her. And my grandpa, we called him Grandpa Veldy, didn't find out till I was older that he was my step-grandpa. I don't know, I just never put it together. But he came over here from Holland as a young boy, and I just remember that he was missing some fingers. He always said, "You bet your boots," and smoked cigars. He was so kind and loving to me. I guess that's why I missed him so much. I would also cry, and my heart hurt so much because I just wanted my dad in my life. On very rare occasions, Dad would call and tell me he was coming to pick me up to spend time with him. I would always get so excited. I knew that he would take me out to eat at either McDonald's or Captain D's. Then we would go over to one of my uncle's houses and watch the Dolphins play while they all sat around playing poker and drinking. I would sit at the front window or on the front porch and listen intently to each and every vehicle approaching from a ways away to see if that was my dad or not. I could know just as soon as I possibly could that my dad was actually coming to see me. There were times where I sat there hours waiting for him, and he'd finally pull up across the street at my aunt's house, which was his sister, and I would run as fast as I could to get over and see him. There were also times where I sat for hours upon hours and he never showed up. Even though he never really spent quality time with me, I was just happy being around him, knowing that he cared enough to want to see me. I remember just watching him and studying him. I was trying to figure out if I was anything like him. Sometimes he would drink way too much and it would scare me. I was also so worried that something bad was going to happen to him and that I would lose him forever. I just wanted to take care of him. One time when he came to have a visit with me, he was supposed to keep me overnight. And he took me out to eat, and then we ended up at some woman's house. All I knew is that she must be rich because her house was huge. And can you believe it? She had an ice maker in the door of her fridge. Well, anyway, apparently I was in the way, so she took me to one of her rooms with a bunch of creepy dolls. She locked me in the bedroom, and I sat there staring at these dolls as they stared back. Y'all have to remember, I was a feral tomboy. I don't remember playing with dolls much at all. I was more interested in jumping on my horse and taking off to the creek, riding my bike, or whatever, but I was outside most of the time. I didn't have shoes on my feet most of the time. Now here I am, locked in a room with these dolls. No ma'am. I started banging on that door and crying for my dad. They finally unlocked the door and let me out, and Dad took me to his mama's house. He acted like we were going to go to bed. So he crawled in the bed with me, was trying to wait till I went to sleep, and I caught him trying to sneak out to leave me. So I just begged him, just, Dad, take me home. So he finally took me to Mama. I was in the way. This may have been the time in my life where I started going to AA counseling when I was in school. A few of us kids would meet and talk about how our alcoholic in our life affected us. And I also had a counselor who I would go visit some, Mrs. Bryant. She was so good to me. She was my counselor from around sixth grade, probably, until high school. So she knew a lot about my situation with my dad. My junior year in high school, I decided I was a grown woman and ready to do life on my own. I'd been dating a guy for a while and we had a really good relationship. I told my mom that I was moving out and we were moving in together. We argued about it for a very short time and she threw her hands up and said, go for it. So I guess I was 16, turning 17 years old when we moved out to the county line for him to work on a dairy. I had to switch high schools, which did not last long because I got kicked out of the other school and sent back to Okeechobee, which was totally fine with me. My life consisted of high school, playing house, and hog hunting. Things happened, things changed, our relationship ended, and I ended up moving in with my best friend Jenny, who was the same age and married. I became her problem because I refused to go home. I was working at a drive-thru convenience store at the time, still going to school, and at some point my truck was repoed because I didn't pay the payments and was in a pickle. So this guy comes in through the drive-thru and asked me if I wanted to hang out, and after work, he pulled up and I jumped in the truck. I mean, I had no other way to go at the time, unless Jenny came to get me, and she was pretty much tired of my crap. We hung out some while I remained living with Jenny. Then one day I get a phone call that my granny had died. That was my dad's mom. Now, there's gonna be some family that listens to this and it will probably ruffle feathers, but it is what it is. This woman was not very kind to me at all. I spent very little time with her, and when I did, she compared me to my older sister who my dad had with his first wife. I will never forget one time visiting her and her asking me to put curlers in her hair. Y'all, the woman wore a wig. She had like three hairs. But I was happy to help and just trying to please her. I did my best at that age, and she scolded me and told me that I couldn't do anything right and I would never be as good as Shane, which is my sister. I was devastated. I went to one of her bedrooms and I just cried and I could not wait to go home. I also recall seeing her Bible and walking in her room while she was watching church on TV. She never once shared the gospel with me or anything else about God. But I went to her funeral, a friend dropped me off, and I walked in and I sat in the very back of the room by myself. A little while later, my dad came in with his wife and sat down. My cousin kept motioning for me to move up front, which made my dad notice me, I guess, and I ended up sitting with my dad. I reached for his hand and he pulled it away from me. He was real cold towards me, and that was crazy and off because we had been building a relationship. We had been talking on the phone and we were just really starting to get close. I later found out that his wife was telling him stories that she heard about me and just causing issues between us, building a wedge. But that rejection sent me into a spiral. So I called that guy that had been coming through the drive-thru and told him to pick me up. He took me to his place where he was staying with a buddy and I just hung out there. Some of my family somehow figured out where I was and showed up to try to get me to come to the wake. I refused and wouldn't even speak to him. I was angry, I was hurt, and I was confused. My dad and I had just really started building this relationship, and now he was treating me like he didn't even know me. A few days later, my mom called me and told me that my dad had called her and wanted to talk to me. Mama said that she told Daddy that she would relay the message to me. I told Mom what happened and how mad I was, and she said, "Heather, he said it was very important that you call him. He has to talk with you. Just give him a call." I thought about it and didn't want to put a long-distance phone call on the phone where I was staying, so I didn't. I figured it could wait and I'd let him sweat it out a little if it was so important. The next day, I was sitting in my second period class and we were all discussing who we were going to invite to our graduation. I remember saying, "Well, Mama, Ken, my dad," and I felt this sharp pain in my chest. It stopped me dead in my tracks. My best friend Jenny looked at me like, "Are you okay?" And I just repeated, "My dad." And then I shook it off and then I said, "Not his wife though. She is evil and that woman hates me." A few moments later, the bell rings and we head off to our next class. Jenny and I sat down and I still had this feeling that I couldn't shake. Then the door opened and Coach Jackson stepped in. "I need Heather Wilkerson, please." Jenny looked at me like, "What did you do now?" He told me to grab my stuff, so I did, and I followed him to the office trying to figure out, what do they have on me? Coach handed me a pink hallway slip and told me to go see Mrs. Bryant. As I was walking into her office, I saw that there was a number on the back of the pink slip. I knew that I knew the number, but my brain was in slow motion and I just couldn't realize whose number it was. Mrs. Bryant lovingly said, "Sweetie, let me see the paper so we can call." I just handed her the slip and she handed me the phone. My mama picked up on the other end. It was only then that it dawned on me that it was my mama's number. I don't know how I could have forgot that, but I did. I said, "Mama, what's going on?" And she said, "Honey, it's your daddy. He's had a heart attack, but he's okay. He's okay. You just need to go see him. Sean, which is my brother, he'll come pick you up and he'll take you to Clewiston. And that's the town where my dad lived on the bottom of the lake. I said, oh no, you ain't sending him. I was mad at him, and he was one of the ones that showed up at the house to take me to Granny's wake, and he wasn't bossing me around. I was in shock and confused. But Mama said Daddy was okay. I'll just have Jenny take me, Mom. Don't worry about it. The town was about an hour away, and Jen and I weren't out of school until after that period. So I waited for her to get out, and I told her. She took me to where I was staying so I could change, as I had worn sweatpants and a sweatshirt to school that day and wanted to put something else on. We made a long drive to Clewiston and pulled into the hospital. We pulled around the back, and I saw most of my family there. As Jenny was pulling up to park, I saw my brother put his head down and start walking towards me. I looked at Jenny and I said, my dad's dead. I stepped out of the truck and I looked my brother in the face. Seeing my brother cry was so scary. He grabbed me and he said, sis, dad's gone. I was in total shock. I was numb and in pain. At the same time, I just balled up and cried. I couldn't believe it. After a little while, I told everyone I was going to go into the restroom and wash my face. But I was on a mission to find my dad. There was no way that he was gone. I walked through the first set of automatic doors, then the second. I stopped. I looked towards the right, and there was a white door with a wreath on it that had little red holly berries on it. It was just drawing my attention to it. But I looked to the left, and I saw a bathroom. So I went in, washed my face, and I gathered myself. When I came out, I was facing that white door. I turned left again, and that hallway led me straight to the front. I just walked until I found someone to tell. I want to see my dad. She asked for his name, and after a bit of looking, I saw the look on her face. And I said, yeah, they said he's dead, but I don't believe you. She didn't know what to say. I said, I just want to see him. So she started talking about how she was going to have to go get someone and get someone over her pay grade to help her, and I was like, forget it. I just took off, and I went straight for the room with the white door and the wreath. As I got to the door, I reached for the knob, and I looked up, and my brother was coming through the first set of automatic doors. I knew he would stop me, so I went for it. I barged in there. I opened the door, and there lays my dad. He had tubes coming out of his mouth. He wasn't the right color, and I just gasped, and I just stood there frozen. I don't even know how long I stood there. I don't even remember if Sean said anything or what, but I'm sure that he took me out of that room. My dad loved music. He sang, he played the guitar, and he loved what we call country classics now. George Jones, Waylon, Vern Godson. A few days after Dad passed, I just kept having memories flashing through my head. And I recalled a time, and this happened a lot, where we were riding down the road. Dad had had too much to drink and was talking about how much he loved my mama. Then he told me that when he dies, he wants me to make sure that the song I Did It My Way by Elvis was played at his funeral. My eyes would be so full of tears that I couldn't even see. Snot running down my face. I would just be a blubbering mess. It broke my heart that we were even talking about it. But I really don't think Dad realized what he was doing to me. I don't know. I was talking to my mama on the phone right before the funeral, and I asked if she wanted to ride with me to go. And she said, no, I'm not going. And I was like, what? She said, well, Faye, which was Dad's current wife, she doesn't want me there. And I said, nah, Mom, she will understand. You're there for me and Sean. And she said, I don't know about that. Why don't you call her and ask her if it's okay? So I said, okay. And I hung up. I knew what Faye would say. The woman hated me, hated my mom. I remind her of my mom. And here I am going to call her and ask her this. I knew what she was going to say. Mind you, this woman, knowing that I had just lost my dad, never once called to check on me, see if I needed anything, nothing. Nope. She didn't even involve me in the process of deciding what to do for my dad's funeral. Instead, her, my brother, and her daughter, whom my dad did not like, made all the decisions. I call and I ask, hey, how are you? Make some small talk, and then I just go for it. Hey, Faye, do you mind if my mom comes to the funeral? What? Absolutely not. She better not show up there. No, I do not want her there. Even though I knew that's what she was going to say, it still, I don't know, caught me off guard. I don't know. I just said, okay, I'll let her know. and hung up. I did what any other good daughter would do and called my mom like I was supposed to, even though I was thinking, how am I going to tell her this? On top of losing my dad, this was just too much. I just called Mama and I said, Mom, I talked to Faye and she said it was okay. Mama said, what? And I said, yeah, she said it was fine, so you can just ride with me. The day of Daddy's funeral, we rode together, and that was the first day and the only day that I was ever in church with either of my parents. I knew that that was going to be the day that I was going to get in a fight, because if that woman said anything to my mama, it would have went down. The whole church would have just, it would have been so bad. It would have been so bad, but it wasn't. I wish I had a picture of Faye's face when she saw my mama, but I did come clean and told my mom after the funeral, and my mama was not happy with me, but I don't regret it. I will tell you, I do not regret it. At Daddy's funeral, I just kept saying to myself, this is not real. This is not real. And as long as that song does not play, then we're fine. We're fine, Heather. The preacher went through his spiel. I don't even remember what he said. I don't even know who he was. And they started to take the flag off. And I remember being angry because I figured that was going to Faye. And then they started playing the song. And I can barely get out of my seat to go up and say my goodbyes. I actually had people tote me out of the church. I don't remember coming out of the church. It was a very devastating, difficult time for me. So it was my understanding that my daddy had said that he always wanted to be buried in Ham Hock Holler, which is what he called home, Okeechobee, and he wanted to be under an oak tree. And that's what happened. I think he got one of my uncle's plots or something. I don't know how all of that worked out, but he was there and I would get to go visit his grave. Then one day when I was really pregnant with my first child, I went out there and there was a hole in the ground. He was gone. Faye, without saying anything, had my daddy dug up and moved to Clewiston. She not only did that, but she bought a plot to be put next to him and had the tombstone already done. And there's like concrete that goes over the top of the graves. And she was going to make sure that she had the last say. So I don't know what kind of cruel person does that, but they're out there. Even though Faye was handing out stuff after Daddy's funeral to people out of the closet, she didn't give me anything. My brother later on did give me his cowboy hat and cowboy boots, but before Daddy died, he was able to give me a tote full of his Vietnam stuff, his letters, memorabilia, pictures, things like that, and I cherish it more than anything else that anybody could have ever given me, because it gave me a lot of answers about my dad. It showed me what Vietnam was and how he struggled and why. It gave me the answers of why he was the way he was and what can happen when PTSD goes untreated. Daddy ended up dying at the age of 51 of a heart attack. You can imagine that this was a vulnerable time in my life, and my relationship with Doug, which was the guy from the drive-thru, was kind of getting serious, I guess, if that's what you want to call it, meaning we moved in together out on the ranch that he worked for. He had a really bad drinking problem and didn't have his driver's license, but I was going to put any dreams that I had aside and I was going to do anything for him. I was going to fix him and he needed saving, and that's what I was going to do. Because in June of 97, I found out that I was pregnant. That's when I graduated high school, and I was going to have a normal life for my daughter. She was not going to go through what I went through. So I felt like I had to fix everything. Life started moving really fast once I found out I was pregnant, and my focus was on nothing but being the best mama I could ever be. And that meant getting married. So we were married in August of 97. Now my focus was on being a wife and a mama. Doug, on the other hand, should I say the other hand? He only had one hand. The other one was cut off. I don't know. Anyway, whatever. He wasn't going to make it easy. His drinking was destroying our family. But I was bound and determined that I wasn't going to let my daughters, Carly came along afterwards, later on, go through what I went through. There were a lot of sleepless nights wondering where he was because he would just take off and he might come back or he might not in a day or two. I was in constant worry he was going to get pulled over with no license and then what? How was I going to raise these two kids on my own? And he needed to be able to drive to work. It was just all a mess. It was so stressful. It was a lot. Still, he was not a bad person. He was an alcoholic. When he wasn't drinking, he was one of the best people you would ever meet. He was a super great guy. It's just that he allowed the alcohol to have control over him. While all of this was going on, I start learning about the ranch that I'm living on. The owner was part of the Okeechobee 8. They were involved in bringing in millions of dollars worth of cocaine, over a ton, into Florida in the late 80s. And the sheriff at the time committed suicide. Now, if you remember, I was born in 1978, so I was just a kid when all of this was going on. I didn't know about it. So at 18, when I landed on Hell's Farms, I had no idea about the history, and I was focused on being a mom and a wife. Richard, the owner, and I, we became very close. He was almost like a father figure to me. I cooked supper for him all the time. He came over all the time. We hung out all the time. We went out to eat together all the time. I mean, I hung out with him a lot. We traveled. Like, he would say, we need to go collect money. And we would drive down to South Florida and collect money, making a day of it. I worked on the ranch at some point. We were growing watermelons and sod. I enjoyed my time at the ranch. Richard talks some about the Okeechobee 8 thing. Of course, he thought he got a bad deal. And then there was the day that I told Richard about my dreams of becoming a deputy, which was really memorable. We were leaving a restaurant and I was sitting in the back of his SUV, Doug up front. I told him I was planning on working my way into law enforcement. He lost it. He'd never done that with me. He was so disappointed with me, saying bad things about law enforcement. And of course, my comeback was, oh yeah, they're the first people you call when you're in trouble. And for Richard, that was not true. Anyway, we went back and forth, and whatever he said made me want to do it even more because that's who I am. As I involved myself more and more with law enforcement, the more Richard and Doug didn't like it. It was difficult to get Doug to watch the girls. His drinking was getting worse. We were fighting all the time. We ended up splitting up. The girls and I moved into an apartment in town. I was working in dispatch, and then the SO sent me to BLET. Man, that was a struggle. Doug was not dependable, and it got where I couldn't even trust him with the girls anymore. I didn't, not that he would hurt them on purpose, but they just weren't safe in his care. I tried to rely on my mama some, and she refused to keep them for me because I was in school to be a cop and women shouldn't be cops. Doug and I would try to work things out, but then he was becoming more and more distant and discreet and unreliable, and it just was not working. His drinking and whatever else that he was into was not something that I was going to involve myself in, and I was definitely not going to have my girls in the middle of. I was alone. I was determined to succeed. I was broke because I was only paid once a month. That was hard. I was going through a divorce. I didn't know what he was into. I didn't know what I was in the middle of. I was trying to break into a man's world in law enforcement in the middle of that. I was just going through a lot. And to try to get out of my reality and into something else, I started going into online chat rooms. I met a guy in one of those chat rooms who said all the right things and gave me so much attention, and we started meeting up halfway, which was Savannah, Georgia. I definitely had never had a romantic weekend planned for me. I had never even really been on a vacation before. It was all new, and because I was looking for something to fill that void, I took everything he said, hook, line, and sinker. There is so much more to share with you. So much, in fact, that I had to make this a two-part series. So for now, I'm going to leave you with knowing a lot about almost half of my life. I've shared multiple traumatic situations with you that I went a lifetime not knowing what to do with. Next week, I'll share many more with you. But don't miss the point. I want you to understand that no matter how bad things can get, how broken you may feel, how far gone you think you are never too anything for Jesus Christ. He loves you no matter what sins you've committed or how much someone else's sin has wounded you. So be back here next week for part two of the series, From Trailer Trash to the Daughter of a King, where I'll share my life after moving to North Carolina. I'll see y'all then. Hey sis, I can't even begin to explain how much it means to me that you are here and listening to this show. I am beyond grateful for you. If you enjoyed it or learned anything today, share it with your friends. Screenshot it, share it on your Instagram and Facebook, and be sure to tag me in it so I can give you a shout out and a thank you. Don't be a stranger. Make sure you are following all of my social media accounts to keep up to date on what's going on. I look forward to discussing these topics and hearing your ideas on what you want to hear on this podcast next. So, find me on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. Hit the follow or subscribe button to be sure you are receiving those notifications when something new is happening. Please, and most importantly, help a sister out. Take a minute to show me some love. Give me some stars and write a little review on Apple iTunes. Send this Jesus-loving, truth-spitting, regular old country girl to the top of the algorithm so other women can find my content to help themselves or someone they love. Thanks so much for listening in, y'all. Remember, friends, forgive your enemies, it messes with their heads. Until next time, love and blessings, Heather.